Hey everyone, it's Tronster here in the basement of the Geek House for the Basement Game Dev Podcast. I have on the sofa to my left my partner in crime,
howdy,
Brett. And I also have three fantastic game developers on the host guest sofa. We are the hosts, they're the guests. Yes. Guests, hey!
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Why don't you tell all of our listeners who you are and what you do.
I'm Brianna, and I work at ZeniMax Online, and I make effects, so make all the explosions and things, magic.
I'm Taylor Fisher. I'm a concept artist at Firaxis Games. I make all of the idea thingies.
I'm Michelle Menard. I'm a systems designer at Zynga East and the author of Game Development with Unity, and I make your money go away.
She does indeed. She's very effective at that. And, you know, we've all worked at multi-studio, most has worked at multi-studios. Some people or one person has not, but everyone here is excellent regardless. And, yeah, you know, we're just continuing some of our talks from before and going into some new talks. One talk that we did last month was about the women's in game development. And there's just one topic I want to touch on before we go into our next topic this month, and that was the whole idea of booth babes. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk from reviewers or consumers in booth babes, but I'm wondering from female game developers, what your view is of booth babes at these conventions that are promoting games that you may have worked on or games that you may be interested in playing?
I guess I'll start talking about booth babes. I mean, for me, booth babes are really interesting because I feel like a lot of the time you get the people saying booth babes should be gone altogether. Like, don't, like, sexualized women is terrible. Like, put some clothes on those ladies. Calm down. You know, none of that. But I have a really strong opinion that I think really what I think it needs is more diversity within the booth bodiness.
Equality within the booth.
The quality within
equal
the booth.
Equal opportunity objectification.
Exactly. Because I think a lot of time the problem is that when you say, you know, you should cover up booth babes and things, then you get into this weird area of slut shaming where it's saying, like, yeah, sexy women are bad. Like, women don't like sex. Like, don't look at my body. Like, never look at me, you know, as something that could be sexy. And that's a really tough issue because a lot of people feel uncomfortable with that kind of thing. But yeah, like Brianna said, I think equal opportunity objectification. I don't see anything wrong with you know, booth boys. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's actually a case with a really awesome cosplayer of Altair, I think, for the last Assassin's Creed
he
game.
He was fabulous.
And a lot of people loved it. Like, tons of pictures with this character. And that's the thing. It was one of the few male representatives of a game at a booth. And why they don't do more stuff like that, I don't understand. I mean, I would love to see a Kratos wandering around. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, slow down.
Except, I think I speak for all of us. No one's trying to stop, you know, the whole sex sells and marketing. I mean, that's
exactly
a huge thing. No one's stopping that. It's just that, you know, it's only women that you really ever see, and that's mm-hmm. more of the problem. Mm-hmm. Like, I agree the women's, like, a woman's body can be very pretty to look at, but at the same time, I'd also like to see a dude up there every now mm-hmm. and then. And
yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think a lot of it, now this is just my personal opinion, I think a lot of it has to do with just, like, homophobia in the game culture itself. I mean, you know, you get on Xbox Live, and if you have a voice like me, they might call you, you know, assume that you are the F word. And, you know, not, it's not feminist.
Yeah, I don't like to say, yeah, feminism is not a dirty
word. The other F word that ends in
slang term for cigarettes.
Yeah, that one.
Ah.
Yeah, the one that I feel uncomfortable saying. But, like, anyway, they might call you that. They call you gay. They call you all sorts of things because they assume that you can't be a woman and have mm-hmm. a feminine voice. Mm-hmm. Like, clearly, if I have a feminine voice, I'm a gay man or a 12-year-old. Anyway, I think a lot of it, what it comes down to, is that people are uncomfortable with looking at sexy men. Mm-hmm.
And I think even offline, we'd mentioned before about, it's bad enough if you say you're a woman, but if you say you're a woman game developer and you're playing an online game, like, that's just something that's unbelievable.
It's unrealistic, mm-hmm. is what a lot of people think.
Yeah, I think you're lying.
Yeah, yeah. You're trying to, like, yeah, be impressive to them or something. Like, you know,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Well, what are some of the type of games you play? Is it only online, non-immediate social games? Like, I don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it.
I'm looking at you.
I'm sorry. because Michelle works at an awesome company, but I'm gonna say in Farmville. Oh no, wait. Let's pretend I didn't say that and say Sim Social.
Okay.
There we go. So, is that the only game you're playing, or are you guys playing some games outside of that social sphere?
Yeah. Well, Guild Wars 2. Woo! PvP, woo. World versus War, MMO.
There you go.
Yeah! Kill some players! Mm-hmm. Dead!
I was going to say, we had a weird offline discussion about Dynasty Warriors.
My god! It's so good!
So, yeah, we were talking about Saints Row, and I was saying, you know, I picked up Dynasty Warriors Gundam at the same time that I picked up Yakuza 3.
Cause, oh, my god.
Because I was going to say, I was like, dudes ripping their shirts off to fight. There we go.
Did they really do that?
They begin.
Okay. Hey, Brian, you might turn the levels down when Michelle gets...
I'm sorry.
She does beat the levels. It's going in the red all over the board. It's ridiculous.
But I was going to say, casually I play Dynasty Warriors. I play Yakuza 3. I know I finished Journey, Flower Flow. Those are like some favorites. Ico, Shadow of the Colossus.
Yep.
But I mean, hardcore, Monster Hunter, Pokemon. I mean, Pokemon. I min-max, you know, my Pokemon pretty badly. I EV, IV train all of my Pokemon.
You're a breeder.
I do breed Pokemon pretty religiously. Monster Hunter, I break down all the stats and everything. League of Legends, I'm ELO climbing right now for season 2 of League of Legends.
You're level 30. I'm still not level 30. You're there How and you're doing...
I have a higher ELO than Ananda, so that's
Holy
pretty...
Holy... Well, what?
Yeah, I was going to say, Ananda's our game designer for... He's working
on XCOM. He did XCOM, you know, came out a few months ago, and it's... Wow, you have a higher ELO
I have a higher ELO than our game designers. So that's my thing, though. But I was telling people I have my dry erase board next to my computer. I write down spawn times of all the monsters. I do the math for people's statistics, like their stats really quick and their rune pages in my head while I'm playing. I range pretty broadly between casual games. I mean, I play Gears of War for lulz. And then I come back to my League of Legends for some hardcore gaming, so...
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Borderlands 2 recently.
Good.
Yeah, it's so amazing, especially like with co-op, and it's just it's so good. It's so awesome.
Why as a game designer do you find it like good and awesome?
You mean effects artist?
Well, you are a game developer, I should say. Game designer, but game developer, you know, an effects artist in there. Why do you like Borderlands 2?
Oh, just because it's fun. Like, I go around and I get to blow up stuff, and then I get all the guns. Like, there's so many guns in there. Mm-hmm. And the big thing about Borderlands 2 is that, I mean, it really is fantastic as a co-op game. I mean, there's so many mechanics in there that encourage you to play with other people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a decent game if you're playing it, you know, just by yourself. When you have someone else in there, it just adds so much to it, especially if you're, you know, talking with them and playing co-op or whatever. And besides that, I also still play a lot of TF2.
Yes.
Yeah, that's where you got to be careful going into a random server unless you know everybody in there, because then they're going to ask you, you know, are you 12, blah, 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 why haven't your testicles dropped? Mm-hmm. I've had that asked to me more than once.
I still play League of Legends on Skype with my microphone muted.
Yeah, it's its best because
I still type.
Yeah, when I pug on Guild Wars, I don't do it with a microphone.
Yeah, that's because you don't want people to know that you're a woman, because they will. So like, I've kind of just used the headphones now. I don't use my mic.
Yeah,
that's a weird issue. Like I've never even had to think about this. Like Brett, have you ever even once thought about like the sound of your voice, how it's going to come across, like your gender taking into account with the other players?
My voice, no, but there's so many D-bags online that. The only way I usually play is I get into party chat with my friends and we mute everybody else and it's just us because we don't want to hear it.
They're mostly douchebags, I think.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
They'll troll anyone. It's like they're equal opportunity trollers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a weird case where I was playing League of Legends with this one person because I do support bot for all those League of Legends people. We can nerd out about this later. I found a partner to do my ADC bot, and we're playing together. We played together for like 6 months, and then finally we were like, well, we should Skype because we're ELO climbing together and it makes it a little bit easier. And we get on there and he I found out he's like a 16 year old boy in high school, and he thought I was 12 or something and a boy. And I was like, no, I'm 24 and like I'm a game developer. And he was really and a woman. Oh my god, stop the presses. And it really freaked him out, and I think, and it startled him, and it actually was really interesting because I'm not a huge fan of using the term raped in games. That's like a really big faux pas for me, and I don't think that's an acceptable thing where people are like, oh, we raped them. And I was like, you're using the term raped as a positive word. And it was really interesting because after playing with me for that while and then finding out that I was female, he immediately stopped.
Playing games with you?
No, stopped using the word raped to describe it, or like calling people faggots, you know, stuff like that. Like, pardon me. Like, it's just, the whole thing was really interesting. But
it was out of respect for who you are.
It was weird, though, because a lot of people, I asked them straight up, like, please don't say that. It's very hurtful. It's not right. You shouldn't do it. And they, you know, call me names and, again, troll me and stuff like that. But then, you know, I feel bad that as a woman I had to kind of, like, earn respect before I could ask someone to stop saying something that was deeply hurtful to me.
Yeah.
So, which sucks. As a female game player, especially as a female hardcore game player, because you want to be able to min-max all your stats without having to worry about someone, you know, doing something that's super hurtful, you know, like in a deeply personal way. And I think that's the hardest part about it. So,
I hear a lot of similarities. I hear a lot of differences between you know, just guys going online, and that's, you know, it's very eye-opening. I'm going to shift gears here. We're going to go from third to fourth gear. We're almost to fifth. And we're going to go and talk about the subject at hand for this podcast, about, even though we're halfway in, and that's the Metacritic scores. And us as game developers, you know, men and women, just how the Metacritic system, or just even the reviewed score system, works out. And I want to know, like, do you feel that there is any disparity, there's any sort of problem inside of the game industry now? Like, do you feel that all the games get a fair scoring, or do you feel that there's definitely some kind of dealings happening behind the scenes in order to go and inflate or deflate scores for games that are coming out?
Well, there's definitely, not necessarily just with money going exchanging hands, but there's definitely a disparity come closer to the holidays when there's so many games that are coming out that the lesser known titles are only going to get 2-3 hours worth of playtime, and that's what you get your review out of. And sometimes that's just the tutorial because some guy has to play 50 games in a week. And then there's also cases where, you know, games are required to get Metacritic scores in order to get bonuses or royalties or things like that. And then, you know, based off of shady happenings, you know, different reviewers may be enticed to get, you know, to give a game a lower or higher score.
Yeah, I think that this is a really big political issue, because so for those of you at home don't know how publishers and developers work, a lot of times you'll have a publisher and they're the guys that actually distribute your game. So, like, Steam or Xbox Live or the PlayStation Network or whatever, you'll have some publisher out there. And in their contract with you, they might, you know, say something like, hey, if you get, you know, above an 80 or an 85 or whatever, we'll give you a bonus. Or, you know, they'll have some sort of incentive or, like, a salary thing. Like, they might tie it in with your salary or something will happen. And then, anyway, if you get, like, a 77 or something, like, well, then that affects you personally on, like, a financial level. I mean, what if you don't get a raise? What if you don't get a bonus? Like, what if your bonus is crappy?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, you know, crap tied in with that. And I mean, I know this has affected me personally in my career. I mean, I have been at studios that have gotten, you know, instead of getting an 80, they got like a 77 or whatever. And that really wasn't good for the developer I was at. I mean, that, you know, tied into how much money we got. So, the way I see it with Metacritic and reviewers, I think that reviewers should be able to be critical if they want. They should be able to say what they want and speak their minds. But it shouldn't affect, ideally, it wouldn't affect us personally, because they could have a lot of potential there to screw us over as developers. I mean, we could lose our jobs over it. And that's really upsetting, you know? I mean, if anybody here has lost their job, I mean, they know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, crap. I mean, how am I going to pay the bills? But, you know, I understand journalists. I mean, they want to, well, I don't really understand them. I mean, they're just kind of these people, and they have opinions about stuff, and that's cool. And I want them to have their opinions. Like, if I make a crappy product, I want them to be able to say, man, your game sucks, and here's why. And you only get a 2 out of 10. And you know what? Like, a lot of that can be constructive, you know?
Well, I mean, the journalists have jobs, too. I mean, there are a lot of politics to say behind it, but, you know, they're also concerned about who gets the cover for the next month. Like, what game are they going to promote? What's their standing with the publisher? Because that's a lot of times how they get the covers and, like, the exclusive deals over, mm-hmm. like, the other magazine next door. It's the relationships they have with the publishers. So for them, it's the same problem. They need to keep their job, too. And so I can understand sometimes when, you know, there's things happening in the background that, yes, maybe the review wasn't as unbiased as it could have been. However, there are extenuating circumstances. The issue I do have, though, is with developer bonuses tied to those reviews.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's not really a good, necessarily, idea for how the game actually sold. It's like, maybe it should be tied instead to revenue or items sold, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah,
and make your bonuses off that. It's when your bonuses are tied to something which has, alternative motives and biases behind it. That's when it starts to suck.
Yeah, I like the numbers sold thing, because technically the reviewer is giving you a Metacritic, like, in the cumulative Metacritic score. I mean, technically, it's kind of irrelevant because, yeah, but one place could be buddy-buddy with a studio or with a publisher.
And they're not out to screw you over.
And to benefit you, or in a lot of cases, to put you down because they know they might get perks from another place. It's not unbiased, and that's where my issue comes in. How to deal with that, I don't really know. There's a lot of, I mean, it's like with any press, election year, I know we're, I mean, it's like with anything, it's almost impossible to distill the information down to an unbiased source and then take that as kind of like a constructive salary base. And that's, it doesn't seem like a productive thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know, again, too, even me, I mean, I'm a biased source. I'm someone in the industry. I don't want, you know, a poor Metacritic score to directly, you know, be the marker for the amount of work that I have done on something or the amount of work my studio has put towards something, because it might be incorrect, you know, it might not actually reflect the numbers sold. I mean,
reviewer who doesn't even like strategy games, yeah. something reviewing it, and then they're not going to give it a good review. It's not their kind of game.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, or it'll be like some cases, like the original Okami studio did excellent. But Clover ended up like going, I mean, they got closed?
Yeah.
They got closed. And I mean, that's one of those things where it's like, what do you do about stuff like that? I would love to have seen that studio make more.
Mm-hmm.
But you have stuff like that happens. Weird things like that go on. I know with Big Huge Games, like, people really enjoyed Reckoning. I mean, that whole thing was really great. It was a really strong studio, and it's a really great group of people. And I was along for that ride when that kind of collapsed and, you know, sank into the ocean. It was just, you know, it's weird. And Metacritic score, I don't know. I definitely don't think it's necessarily relevant to the discussion of bonuses or salary.
But yeah, that shouldn't go away. I mean, I think it's a valuable thing to have for people to make decisions, to just see a conglomerate sort of, like, you know, idea of what the reviewers think. But
exactly.
The fact that people's bonuses are actually tied to that almost random score is atrocious.
Yeah.
It should be an indirect effect on the bonuses where if the review is so low, the consumers will see that it's so low, then they'll buy less copies.
Because the product is inferior, not because this one person had some other thing he had to deal with on the side. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I know for a long time, every game that was published by LucasArts got bad reviews simply because it was not an adventure game.
Yep.
There was
really? Is that true?
There was an unwritten mm-hmm. rule. Well, not unwritten.
Long time ago.
But basically, LucasArts stopped making adventure games. And everybody wanted more adventure games from LucasArts. And so any game that was not an adventure game, they would just bash because it wasn't an adventure game.
It wasn't what they wanted, so why not?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, that just opened my eyes. I'm going to have to look at some scores after they stop publishing adventure games.
Yeah, there's a lot of places that aren't necessarily Metacritic relevant, or a lot of reviews that are not necessarily Metacritic score relevant because they don't actually put out a number. But there are even still number relevant places that'll give scores just because it's not the next, you know, it's not the next shooter that they wanted, or it's an RTS instead of an RPG, or, you know, it's a MOBA and not, you know, what they wanted. And I mean, that gameplay style bias is also a notorious culprit for poor reviews.
Well, how about the studio itself? That's a great segue into my next question, and that is, indie studios are not as much tied to the whole AAA development politics and everything that, you know, the wheeling and the dealing that occurs. So for indie studios, where do you think their place falls within the whole Metacritic score? Is it something they even need to worry about? Is it something they should strive for a high score? Is it irrelevant to them? Or, you know, how should indies approach the whole reviewing and scoring system that all these reviewers for magazines and blogs and websites will do?
So, in my opinion, as somebody who's worked on what I would consider to be an indie game, we did have a publisher. But in my opinion, the reviews should be irrelevant. Like, we should just make the best game that we can possibly make as developers, make the best possible product we can make.
You say should be.
Yeah, in an ideal world, like, where, you know, this isn't tied in with any of our contracts. I mean, you know, if I'm a self-publishing indie, let's say, like, I have my website, and you can just go to my website, and you can download briannasgame.zip, and you download that, and then there's an executable in there or whatever, and you launch that, and everything works. Ideally, like, I would not really care about my Metacritic score. Like, I would probably read the reviews and look at the reviews and say, oh, this guy thinks that I should do these criticism things and, you know, take that criticism back and, you know, try to use that to make my game better or make my next game better or whatever. But ideally, like, the actual Metacritic score, like, that number, it should not be all that relevant, in my opinion. Like, I kind of would like to take the words and the criticisms people have and use that as, like, kind of a base to figure out what I did good and what I did wrong. Because, like, I mean, a number is just a number. I mean, it's kind of like this lump of all these people just mashing all their number opinions together into this one thing. And, I don't know. I would probably not pay attention to Metacritic. Unless I had a publisher, which might be different.
Well, then, yeah. On some level, when you're an indie, any publicity is good publicity because you're getting your name out there. I mean, one could argue that Minecraft really got put on the charts when Penny Arcade did a comic about them, and that was when people were like, what the fuck is that? I'm good. Sorry.
Explicit.
Hey! I'm going to go look at what the hell that is. Might as well just keep going now. Because what's this game I've never heard of? Penny Arcade wrote about it, and it doesn't matter really what they said. It's like, well, I need to go find out more about this. And that drove purchases. And I think the same thing is true with Metacritic from a player-facing standpoint, that it doesn't really matter so much what the number says. Like, you know, you hear reviews, you see reviews, but if you were interested in buying a game, usually that's not going to change your opinion, because if you wanted to buy it, something about it appealed to you. And just because one guy on the internet said something else isn't usually going to dissuade you from buying that if you actually wanted to buy it in the first place. So from a player perspective, I mean, any mention of it's only be like, oh yeah, I did want that. That's right. I'm going to go ask that for Christmas coming up really soon now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, the problem is that with developers, that's a totally separate thing. But yeah, I mean, no problem with reviewing.
Yeah. As an indie developer, I don't see any problem with, I mean, a good score is better than a bad score, but a score in the first place is a score.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good to get that publicity out there. I don't think you should be afraid of a Metacritic score. I think you should always be wary of particular reviews in general. Like, you should be wary of creating quality work. But I mean, that should be an overarching theme anyway. It shouldn't be.
Well, yeah, you should be putting out shit.
Yeah, don't make shit games, because then we'll be very confused, very sad. But don't shy away from it because of critique or because of criticism.
All right, very good. I think those are some pretty good words for everyone to follow, whether you're a AAA or an indie. I want to thank everyone for coming down to the basement, for eating pizza, drinking some drinks. And we look forward to you tuning back in next month for the next Basement Game Dev Podcast. This is Tronster, signing off.